Thank you, George and Pastor Stephanie and team for leading us in. Oh my goodness, that was, what a great introduction. My name is Matt, and I've only been here, I've visited a couple of times the last few months as after I knew I was going to be preaching, but I've had a long connection with this church. I've pastored a couple of your sister congregations, West Point Grey Baptist Church in Vancouver, and then Red Deer First Baptist before that. But I gotta admit, a little nervous preaching here today because, okay, I'm gonna be a little American here. Y'all got some all-stars in this church. Like, seriously. I am American, for which I hope you forgive me. But seriously, over the last number of years, I've been able to get to know a few folks from your congregation. So Pastor Jocelyn and my wife worked together for a number of years at Cary, and then I don't know when I met Dana, but it was many years ago. When I was in Red Deer still, that's right, back in the, I don't know, 90s, early 2000s. And then Dave and Pauline. Dave was my first boss when I went to work at Cary as the dean of students there. Dave, I don't know how many years ago that was, maybe 19 years ago or something like that. Can it be? And honestly, it's amazing to me that I've been here that long, because as a young man, I moved all over the place. My parents were missionaries with what is now New Tribes Mission, and they served in Brazil. But some of the memories that I have from that time mostly surround driving. I was from the state of Kansas, and my parents would drive to these places to raise funds and gather prayer partners, and I'll tell you, long trips in the car. Before there were videos, we'd no CD players. I think one of our cars might have had a cassette player. But, you know, we're driving between Wichita, Kansas, and Des Moines, Iowa, and it gets a long way. So the four of us kids would be getting antsy in the back, and so my mom, in desperation, would turn to that old favorite. Hey, kids, let's play the alphabet game. Anybody play the alphabet game in cars? That's right. Well, if you don't know what it is, it means you quietly look out the windows and you look for road signs with letters from A to Z. Okay, so if you're lucky as kids, you're driving through the metropolis of Omaha, Nebraska, and there's lots of signs, you know, at least 15 or 20 of them. And you look, and getting A, B, C, D, E, that's not too hard. But if my mom was lucky, we'd be driving through the cornfields of Iowa, and there'd be a sign like every 3 or 4 miles. And this game would take hours. First 5 letters come easy. Then you get to the middle, and this game has a long middle. You get to J and Q and X, not too many signs. I'm pretty sure I never made it to the end of that game. I would finally give up. The middle was just too long. And I tell the story because I think that's where we find the churches that are being written to in this book that we read from earlier, The Revelation of Jesus Christ. These 7 little churches in Asia Minor were in the middle of a very long journey. For 6 decades, they'd been told the coming of Jesus was imminent. He was coming back soon. I don't know what they expected that to mean, but I doubt it was 6+ decades. And now they find themselves in a spot where Jesus' kingdom didn't appear any more visible now than it was those decades before. In fact, if anything, the domination of Rome and Caesar even seemed more complete than ever. You look at their buildings, you look at their roads, you look at their money, and the kingdom of Rome and Caesar's image was everywhere. And so maybe they too were ready to quit like kids playing the alphabet game. Maybe they too were sliding into conforming to Caesar's kingdom like the world around them, and they needed a fresh picture of Jesus. And so Jesus, through the Apostle John, gives them that exact thing as they wander through this long middle. Maybe some of you are there right now, in that long, long middle. You face a situation, you're in a place where you didn't expect to be, you don't want to be, and it's going on a long time, and you don't know where it's going to end. Right now, I serve in West Vancouver in a place called Inglewood Care Center. Most of the people I minister to every day are dealing with some type of dementia or some type of calamity of their body that they did not want. So I was talking to a woman, I'll call her Anne, on Wednesday, and she was crying near the front desk. And so one of the staff members called me over, and I said, "What's going on, Anne?" And she does this. She said, "This isn't working, and I don't know why. And my kids, they don't understand." Her daughters come multiple times every week, but she doesn't remember. She's in a long middle. Lovely woman of faith. And her daughters are incredible, but they come and they watch, and they watch as their mom loses her abilities and her memories, and they're in this long middle. We need a fresh picture of Jesus when we're in situations like this. And so Jesus, through John, gives this beautiful image of what is most real. In Revelation, it's not mostly what's real for the future. It's what's most real right now. So John pulls back the curtain, and he shows us Jesus. And near the very beginning of the book, which was the first few verses we heard read, and the very end of the book, chapters 21 and 22, we have the name. The name that you've been sitting with as a community the last couple of months, the name I Am. Reminders of God's identity and God's character for those of us stuck in the middle. And so today the name we get is I Am the Alpha and the Omega. At the beginning of the book, God generally, at the end of the book, Jesus specifically repeats this name three times. I am the Alpha and the Omega. The first and last letters of the Greek alphabet, I am the A and the Z. Now, very few of us speak Greek. Maybe a few of you do, and you'll be checking this out, what I say, but most of us don't. And so when we hear, okay, I am a couple of Greek letters, I don't know. Might not be as meaningful. You know, we hear other images. I am the good shepherd. Yes. I love that picture. I am the light of the world. I'm the bread. I'm the door. I'm the way. Those are things we can visualize and cling to. But Greek letters? I'm the Alpha and the Omega. What does it mean? Well, I can probably picture, but I don't know, thanks to Jesus or John trying to clarify it for us, John, or Revelation 1, 21 and 22 all have phrases connected to I am the Alpha and the Omega. They give us this fuller picture of our God, help us to understand Jesus better, help us understand our own lives better, and give us hope in the long middle. So he says to us first, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last. Kind of sounds like they're the same. Alpha and Omega, first, last letter of the Greek alphabet. I am the first and the last. But it fills out the picture for us of who Jesus is. You see, John isn't the first to use this name. I am the first and the last. The book of Revelation is just saturated with Hebrew scripture. And I am the first and the last is used multiple times by the prophet Isaiah. In the 40s of Isaiah, this beautiful image of Israel returning to their land after being enslaved, Isaiah returns again and again to this. I am the first and the last. And when Isaiah uses it, it's in a very specific context. And it's in a context that we might be surprised by because he uses it to mock. Isaiah uses it to mock the idols that Israel seems to be clinging to for security and life. Isaiah reminds them again and again that these idols are nothing. He wants Israel to take a step back, look at the wide sweep of history, and compare that to these idols they're clinging to. He says, they're nothing. This Lord that you serve, the I Am, is the power over powers. The power over powers. So he wants to say, listen, God's first. The powers weren't first. Isaiah 48. Here's God talking to Israel. Listen to me, Jacob. Israel, whom I have called, I am he. I am the first and I am the last. What does it mean? Well, my own hand laid the foundations of the earth. My right hand spread out the heavens. So heaven and earth both find their root, their history, their creation in God. And God says, when I summon them, they all stand up together. Come together, all of you, and listen. And it goes on. The idols aren't first. Heaven and earth find their foundation, find their creation in God. They aren't first. The powers also won't last. They won't be last. Isaiah 44, Isaiah returns to this image again. God says in Isaiah 44, who's like me? Let him declare and lay out before me what has happened since I established my ancient people. Reminder again that God is first. And here it is, what is yet to come? This looking ahead, this the last. Yes, let them foretell what is to come. Don't tremble, don't be afraid. I love that image. If God is the first and the last, don't be afraid, don't tremble. Did I not proclaim this and foretell it long ago? All who make idols are nothing, and the things they treasure are worthless. Idols aren't the last. They aren't the first. They aren't the last. So why do we allow them to have so much power in the present? Isaiah goes on and says one more thing to us about first and the last. He says these powers now don't have a leg to stand on in the present. If they're not first, they're not last. They don't have power over our now. And so Isaiah 41, one more time, Isaiah tells the people of God, who's done this and carried it through, calling forth the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, here it is, with the first of them and with the last, I am he. And now Isaiah turns to full-on mockery, full-on biting humor, and he gives us this image of some workers together creating this beautiful idol. The metal worker encourages the goldsmith. Good job, you're doing good work. The one who smooths with the hammer spurs on the one who strikes the anvil. One says of the welding, that's good. So you see these four or five guys hanging out together, they're creating an idol, and they're like patting each other on the back. Good work. No, man, you are good. No, man, you are doing some great work. And then Isaiah says this, the other nails down the idol, so will not topple over. Here's this idol, it's so beautiful, it's amazing, but a child who bumps the table it's sitting on will knock it over. A strong wind will knock it over. Isaiah says, it's nothing. He says, God was there in the past. God will be there in the future. And he's powerfully here in the present. So why would we let the powers steal our worship and dictate our life path? Why do we let idols and other powers steal our worship or even our mood and dictate our life path? I think it's a way that we try to grasp control of our future, of our lives. When life feels so out of control and it's hard to see God, then we'll grasp onto anything. Even things that when you think about it in the grand sweep of history are somewhat ridiculous. We're so desperate to be able to hold on to something we can see. And when it's so hard to see and trust God. But John says, hold on. The I Am is the Alpha and Omega. He is the first and the last. We've got a second description in Revelation 21 and 22, where John writes, this I Am is the Alpha and Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. John, didn't you just say that? Like, seriously, Alpha and Omega, first and last, beginning and the end. This is sounding repetitive. Maybe he's just being a good Baptist preacher. 3 points that all line up. Basically say the same thing. You know, he's trying to drill it into us by repetition. But no. No, that's not what's going on here. Jesus, through John, is expanding our vision of who this God is, expanding the vision of these discouraged churches surrounded by Rome, surrounded by empire, surrounded by Caesar. And John is trying to expand their vision of the scope of the rule of God. And so he says, Jesus is the beginning. The language here is arche in Greek. It's beginning, it means ruler, but more than that, it means source and pattern. So we take our word archetype from this word. Jesus is our pattern, our source, our archetype. Daryl Johnson, which any self-respecting person from Regent College will quote, writes in his book, Discipleship on the Edge, he writes this: if Jesus is the arche or beginning, everything owes its existence and finds its pattern for living in Jesus. Everything has its beginning in him and takes its shape from him. And so the vision here of Jesus as beginning is Jesus' pattern. It's this invitational living. Who's going to be the pattern for my life? Remember playing with Play-Doh when you'd push this little tool in the Play-Doh, go through this hole, and then it would be like shaped like a star or a triangle or circle. That's the image of Jesus for us, is to be our pattern. He's our beginning. He's also our end. And again, the Greek does help us here. It's the word telos. And it's more than just the last chapter or back of the book. It's the end as in purpose or aim or goal. Jesus' pattern and purpose. When my daughter Anna was little, I coached her soccer team. I did not intend to coach her soccer team, but I really wanted her to play sports, and I really wanted to set her on a good path towards, you know, I don't know, being in the Olympics or something like that. And so I knew it was very important that she start at the age of 3. And so I signed her up in the Red Deer Soccer League, and they said, well, of course, parents need to help in some way. So I thought through, should I do like juice crystals or bananas or something? I said, no, I want to be with her, but I don't know much about soccer. So I said, I'll be the assistant to the coach. In the Red Deer Soccer League, do you know what they call the assistant to the coach? They call them coach. Because nobody signed up to be coach that year for my daughter's soccer team. And so all of a sudden, I had about 25 3-year-olds that I was trying to convince that the purpose of this game is to put this ball into that net. Some of the kids got it. Some of them did, but not my daughter. She had other purposes, like, Daddy, did you know if you spin around, the clouds spin around too? Or like the little girl on the screen, Daddy, do you know if you pick a dandelion and you rub it on your skin, it's yellow? It's great. And I'm like, Anna, just kick the ball in the net. Come on. That was her first and last season in soccer, and the first and last time they asked me to be the coach. See, they just didn't quite get the telos, the purpose of soccer. There's a grand purpose to it, but they missed it. They're excited by other things. And I think in a much larger way, it's easy for the Church of Jesus Christ to miss our telos, to miss our purpose. We gather together week by week. I think it's brilliant, Pastor Stephanie, what you're doing, asking, why do we do what we do? Because we do the same thing again and again and again until we forget why it is we're doing stuff. And so we fight about issues and we miss our purpose, Jesus. We grump about music and we miss our purpose, Jesus. Because our telos, our purpose, our aim as the community gathered is him. It's his kingdom. the Alpha and the Omega, what does it mean? It means in here that Jesus is our pattern and our purpose. And so these seven little churches surrounded by the great Roman Empire can have courage and imagination to do things that seem little and foolish and useless to a world looking on. So as Caesar taxes the nations that he's taken over, these little churches have dinner together. As slave and free, men and women, as equal, they gather around a common table. As Caesar crucifies criminals, enemies of the state, they rescue babies exposed to the elements because they were the wrong gender. As Caesar goes off to conquer other lands, they stay in towns where sickness has taken over at great cost to their own lives. They can do the little, the foolish, the seeming insignificant, because Rome isn't their pattern. Jesus is. Empire still isn't our pattern. Jesus is. And so Olivet Church, you can have the courage and imagination to do things that seem foolish because the powers of our time aren't our pattern or purpose. So why would we let them shape our now? Jesus is our source and pattern. Jesus and his Father define the purpose for our life. But does his way shape our ways together? His way of loving sacrifice, his way of justice, his way of generosity, his way of wisdom, his way of embodying the image of God, his way of seeking creation's flourishing. Does his way mark our way? So Jesus is Alpha and Omega. Jesus is the first and the last. Jesus is the beginning and end. And again, if John was a good Baptist preacher, he would say Jesus is who was and always will be. It fits first and last, beginning and end, who was and will be. It even sounds good together because there's been a pattern to the way John has described this Alpha and Omega. We expect two things set at opposite ends. But this final descriptor says there's not two things but three, because we need something in the middle between first and last. I have two children. My first child, her name is Anna, and she's named after her grandmother and her great-grandmother. It made sense why we named her Anna. My second child, his name is Zach. There's no Zachs in the family. And so my mother asked me, why did you name him Zach? To which I cheekily replied, A and Z, first and last, beginning and end. To which my mother said, oh no, you're my oldest child. I need more grandchildren. You need to fill in the 24 letters in between. I looked at my wife. She's like, no, that's not going to happen. I've got four more siblings. They can fill in the rest of the letters. My mother desperately wanted more kids in between. She was disappointed. But as followers of Jesus, we do need something, someone in between the beginning and end. And unlike my disappointed mother, we get it. And so our final descriptor is not who was and will be. The final descriptor of Alpha and Omega is who is and who was and who is to come. Listen to that language. Who is, who was, and who is to come. That's important because we sang and we sing in some of our worship songs very true words. Who was and is to come, or which wert and art and evermore shall be. But we miss out on the good news if that's all we sing, because that is true. That's an amazing truth that God was and is and always will be. God is eternal. We hold on to that by faith. But this word here in Revelation starts with who is. I love that. The isness of God. The Greek here is right from the Hebrew, I am, the one who really is. The other names focus on the beginning, his wasness, and the end, his is to comeness. But how we need God's isness. God is present. As he was present in the past, as he will be in the future, so he is present with us now, right in our messy middle. In our past, our present, and our future. But again, this last descriptor of Alpha and Omega isn't simply a repetition of past, present, and future, because that would be who is, was, and is, and ever shall be. God is eternal, and that is true, but this is better. Who is and was and is to come. I love that. The one who is to come. This picture of a God who enters our reality. The one who enters at Bethlehem. The one who enters as the glory of God coming down in the wilderness. The one who enters in the middle of our chaotic lives. This is the God who is to come. The God of mercy and rescue enters our world. The one who protects and judges decisively enters history. He does not remain distant to the long, messy middle. He enters. And sometimes it's going to feel confusing and messy because as he enters, his kingdom collides with and pushes out and transforms the old systems and patterns of living, the kingdom within us and around us. Jesus moves in, and it's not always easy, but it's good. And the good kingdom of Jesus will ultimately be the only kingdom as the kingdoms of this world become the kingdom of our God. And he will reign forever and ever. The kingdoms around us and in us will be transformed. Jesus is Alpha and Omega. He's the first and the last. So those idols that we cling to for security in life, they're nothing in comparison to him. Jesus is Alpha and Omega. He is beginning and end. He's the source and shape of our final reality. And we're invited to let him shape our lives today. Jesus is our Alpha and Omega, who is and who was and who is to come, who continues to be present and enters our real lives. This name brackets and embraces the book of Revelation and those seven churches, and brackets and embraces our lives. There's a couple of implications, I think, here for us. God is Alpha and Omega. Reminds us that we're limited, and that's okay. You don't have to be the Alpha and Omega. You're creation. You're a small part in the grand story. There's a God, and you aren't it. And that's really, really good news. We can rest in the one who is Alpha and Omega. Some of us have worked far too long at being God, and we're weary trying to figure out the beginning and end, trying to hold on to some semblance of understanding and control that we just don't have. We can be still, and know that he's God. Alpha and Omega also extends an invitation, expands our imagination. The ways of Rome, the way of empire is too small. Power, I want it. I will get it from you. The way of Jesus expands our imagination to another way of living. And so Alpha and Omega expands our shrunken imaginations to Jesus-shaped ways of living. And so if we can rest in faith, we can also follow with courage. This one who is Alpha and Omega, first and last, beginning and end, who is and who was and who is to come. May that transform your imagination in whatever messy middle you find yourself in today. Jesus is our Alpha and Omega. Let's pray. Jesus, you are the great I am. And forgive me for forgetting that sometimes, for trying to play God, for trying to cling to things for security that were never meant for that. Thank you that you are the great I am, that you are the Alpha and the Omega, that as you were with me in the beginning, you will be with me in the end, and you are with me right now. And so, Lord, for this dear congregation, for the people here today, for whatever messy middle they find themselves in, may you be their Alpha and Omega, and may they welcome that good news in their lives. In your name, Jesus, amen.